She looks back at him, murderous. It chills my blood. I try not to shudder, try not to think of my brother bleeding like hers did, dying as he falls, dying for nothing at all. Pull yourself together, Samos.
16. Mare. I'm not an idiot, Evangeline. I growl as the changing room door slams behind us. She just sighs, shoving a training suit into my chest. With practiced, even motions, she strips out of her simple gown and tosses it to the side, discarding the puddle of silk like a pile of trash. Naked but for her underclothes, she pours herself into a training suit of her own, clearly custom-made for her, printed with a scaled design of black and silver. Mine is less ornate, a simple navy blue. Furious with her scheming, I pull off my own clothes before forcing the suit on. You might as well just shove us into a closet and lock the door, I snarl, watching her braid her silver hair away from her face. She does it quickly, without thought, forming a crown around her head. Evangeline only twists her lips. Trust me, I would if I thought that might work on you. Him? Yes, a closet would be enough. But you? She throws her hands wide, shrugging. You can never make anything easy. So what? You're going to try to beat the shit out of me and hope he feels some pang of sympathy? Maybe have him nurse me back to health? I shake my head, disgusted. It seemed to be working in Montfort. Her eyes paw over me. Those silences did a real number on you. My eyes narrow. Well, I have my reasons. I snap back, defensive. The memory is like a slap to the face, followed by a deep kick to the gut. I dig my nails into my palm, trying not to slide back into the sensation of being suffocated. In the mountain foothills, in a palace bedroom, from silvers or from manacles. Without thinking, I circle my fingers around my wrist and squeeze. It almost makes me vomit onto the polished tile floor. I know, she replies, softer than before. If she were anyone else, I might think that was concern shadowing her voice. But not Evangeline Samos. She doesn't have the ability to feel sympathy toward Reds. I cough, regaining some of my composure. Even if you somehow did drive us back together, it wouldn't accomplish anything. You said yourself he's not the abdicating kind. It's a stupid plan, Evangeline. I add, for both our sakes. She looks at me sidelong, buckling a brace of daggers into place around her thigh. One side of her mouth lifts. I can't decide if it's a smirk or a smile. We'll see. All grace and agility, she crosses back to the door, gesturing for me to follow her out onto the waxed wood. I do so reluctantly, pulling my hair back into a neat tail. Half of me hopes Tiberius is already gone. I focus my eyes on a spot between her shoulder blades. It's a stupid plan, not just because Tiberius already made his choice. I continue, sliding by her onto the training floor. Instinctively, I shift my weight to the balls of my feet, almost bouncing as we walk. I grin back at her. But also because you're never going to lay a finger on me. She clutches a hand to her chest in false pain. The changing room door slams shut behind her. Mare, I'm supposed to be the overly confident one. I keep grinning, walking backward to keep my eyes on her. I don't trust anyone to fight fair, especially her. Maybe Elaine can lick your wounds? Evangeline only raises her chin, looking down her nose at me. She does, and frequently. Jealous? My face flares red. I feel the heat of it all down my neck. No. Now it's her turn to grin. She shoulders past me, knocking her arm into mine with marked force. I twist, but she keeps her body squared to me, never letting me pass out of her eyeline. We start to resemble dance partners turning in a ballroom, or wolves circling in the dark, predators testing each other, searching for openings and weaknesses, opportunities. I have to admit, the prospect of blowing off some steam and maybe getting a few good rounds in has me excited. Adrenaline already surges through my veins in anticipation. A good fight, the kind without consequences or any real danger, sounds especially delicious. Even if it means admitting Evangeline was right about sparring. Across the floor, I spy Killorn looking on, with Tiberius standing beside him. Ptolemus keeps his distance. I don't waste my attention on them, even though Evangeline wants me to. She'll probably slice my face the second I drop my guard. "You should train more," she says, her voice a bit louder. It echoes through the open space. I wonder if Evangeline was simply born without shame. Work that stress out of your system in other ways, or with other people. I blink a rapid tempo, truly surprised. My entire body floods with warmth, and for once, it isn't Cal's fault. She grins at my discomfort, even tipping her head toward Cal and Killorn a few yards away. Both of them are clearly listening to our conversation, while simultaneously trying to look like they aren't. Evangeline raises an eyebrow toward Killorn, surveying him with a keen eye. The implication dawns on me. Oh, he's not— Don't make me laugh, she sneers, taking another step backward. I'm talking about that other new blood, the Montfort one. White hair, deep voice, thin and tall. Suddenly, the heat coursing through my body turns icy, and I feel the hair on my neck rise. Cal pushes off the far wall. His eyes slide past me as he turns, dropping into his final routine. Push-ups. He works at a steady but fast pace, rising and falling. In the silence, I can just hear his rhythmic puffs of breath over the embarrassing thud of my own heart. Why are my palms so sweaty? Evangeline leers, more than satisfied. She dips her chin a little, nodding, goading me on. Do it, she mouths to me. His name is Titan, and he isn't here, I growl, hating myself as the words come out. Across the room, Cal quickens his pace. This is an even stupider plan, I add, leaning in to whisper as low as I can. Evangeline tosses her head. Is it? She breaks my nose with her skull before I can answer. My vision spots. I see black, red, all colors in a dizzy spiral as I slump sideways, falling to my knees. Crimson blood spurts down my face, running into my mouth and over my chin. The familiar tang wakes something up. Instead of collapsing, I gather my legs under me and spring. My head collides with her chest bone, and I hear a whoosh as the air goes out of her lungs. She stumbles, arms pinwheeling as she lands flat on her back. I swipe a hand across my face. It comes back sticky with blood, and I wince, trying to think through the yowling pain. Across the floor, Cal is on his knee, eyes wide, jaw tight, about to get up. I shake my head at him and spit blood on the ground. Stay where you are, Kalor. He does. The first dagger sings past my ear, a warning. I drop beneath the second, rolling across the smooth, almost slippery wood floor. Evangeline's laughter rings in my ears. I silence it quickly, lunging forward to grab her by the neck. She twists before I can get a good grip and shock her into submission. Only a few sparks touch her as she slides away, using the polished floor beneath us to her advantage. Still, my sparks are not gentle. She twitches as she moves, as if trying to brush off a particularly tenacious insect. You're better than I remember, she pants, coming to a stop a few yards away. I clench one fist, the other pressed to my nose in an attempt to stem the river of blood. Not a pretty picture by any standard. Red spatters the floor already. I could drop you where you stand if I wanted, I tell her, remembering what I learned with the Electricons. Web lightning, storm lightning, but not Titan's impossible brain lightning, which I still have no control over. Evangeline shakes her head, smiling. She's enjoying this. You're welcome to try. I match her grin. Fine. My lightning erupts, purple and white, blinding, burning, hissing through air already damp with sweat. She reacts with near inhuman speed, her knives suddenly melded into a single, long band of steel. It pierces the floor as the lightning hits, making it ripple into the metal. It misses its mark with a flash that blinds even me. Then, her elbow cracks into my chin, throwing me backward. I see stars again. Nice trick, I mumble, rolling the blood around my mouth. When I spit this time, I think I hear a tooth ping off the floor. I confirm my suspicion with my tongue, feeling the sudden unfamiliar gap in my bottom teeth. Evangeline rolls her shoulders, her breath coming in uneven gasps. Had to even the playing field somehow. With a small grunt, she yanks the spear out of the floor and twists it around her wrist. Finished warming up? Slowly, I laugh. Oh, yes. I wait my turn, watching as Ren works on Evangeline's face. One of her eyes is swollen shut, color to black and sickly gray-purple that deepens with the passing minutes. The other eyelid twitches every few seconds, some busted nerve. She huffs at me, shoulders rising and falling, then winces, pressing a bloody hand to her side. Stay still, Ren mutters for the third time. She traces the side of Evangeline's face, and the swelling recedes in her wake. You broke a rib. Evangeline glares as best she can, with one barely working eye.
Good fight, Barrow.
Good fight, Samos, I answer with some difficulty. Between a split lip, the nose, and the bruised jaw, even talking stings. I have to lean, keeping my weight off my left ankle, which is steadily dripping blood from a neat gash above the knobbly exposed bone. The three men stand back, giving us all the space we need to breathe. Killorn looks between Evangeline and me, his mouth hanging open in disbelief, and maybe fear. Girls are weird, he mutters to himself. Tiberius and Ptolemus bob their heads, agreeing. I think Evangeline is trying to wink, or the twitch is worse than I thought. Maybe I'm exhausted from the fight, but I almost laugh. With her, not at her. The realization sobers me up, and the pulsing electric feel of adrenaline starts to fade. I can't forget who she is and what her family has done to mine. Her brother, sitting just a few feet away, killed Shade, robbed Clara of a father, Farley of a partner, took a son from my mother and father, stole a brother from me. And I've tried to do the same. Evangeline senses the shift in me, and her gaze drops, her face returning to carefully sculpted stone. Ren Skonos is skilled. Her skin healer abilities restore Evangeline to fighting shape in a few minutes. The two young women contrast each other, Evangeline with her braided silver hair and pale skin, Ren with a long braid of gleaming jet hair cast over one bare, blue-black shoulder. I don't miss the way Ptolemus watches the skin healer as she finishes up with his sister. His eyes linger on her neck, her face, her collarbone. Not her fingers or her handiwork. It's easy to forget he's married to Elaine. At least in name. Though I suppose his sister spends more time with his bride while he spends his own with Ren. What a confusing family. Now you, Ren says, gesturing for me to take Evangeline's spot. The Samos princess stands, stretching out her newly healed abdomen with the grace of a cat. I sit gingerly, wincing as I do. Big baby, Killorn chuckles. In response, I grin aggressively, careful to show the new gap in my blood-stained teeth. He pretends to shudder. Ptolemus laughs at the display, earning a glare from both of us. Something funny? Killorn sneers, stepping closer to the silver-haired man. My friend is too brave for his own good, with no regard for the Magnetron prince who could cut him in two. Killorn, I'll be along in a second, I cut in loudly, hoping to kill any conflict before it starts. I don't fancy wiping Killorn's blood off the training floor. He glances at me, annoyed by my nannying, but I stay resolute. It's okay. Go on. Fine, he grinds out, careful to glare back at Ptolemus as he walks away. When the echo of his footsteps dies, Evangeline smoothly stands, her intentions clear. She barely smirks as she leaves us too, her brother in tow, and they head in a different direction. She glances over her shoulder. I catch her gaze as it flicks between me and Tiberius, who is still silent, hanging close. Hope flares in her eyes. It only makes my heart sink. It's a stupid plan, I want to say again. Relief pulses from Ren's fingers, soothing each aching muscle and blooming bruise. I shut my eyes, letting her prod and pull me in different directions. Ren is Sarah Skonos's cousin, a daughter of a noble house torn between two Kalor kings. She served Maven before, working as my healer in Archeon. She watched me through those days, kept me alive when the weight of Silent Stone would otherwise kill me, kept my face and my body presentable for Maven's broadcasts. Neither of us could predict where we would be today. Suddenly, I don't want the pain to go. It's an easy distraction from the want in my heart. As Ren's fingers dance along my jaw, stimulating bone growth to replace my lost tooth, I try not to picture Tiberius. But it's impossible. He's close enough to feel, the familiar warmth of him steady and constant. Before, Evangeline said I was the difficult one. I think she's wrong. If she trapped Tiberius and me in a room together, I'd probably snap. And would that be so terrible?
You blush a great deal.
My eyes wrench open to see Ren, hovering in front of my face, her full lips pursed. She blinks at me, her eyes the same stormy gray as Sarah's. It's hot in here, I reply. Tiberius blushes too. We walk in silence. The glass walls of Ridge House look out on flat darkness, the long, clean lights of the passages bouncing back at us. Our reflections keep pace, and I'm struck by the sight of us, side by side. I never forget how tall he is, but this is a firm reminder of how ill-suited we are. Despite the training session, the sweat still clinging to his skin, Tiberius is a prince born, descended from 3 centuries of kings. He was bred to be better than anyone else, and it shows. I feel smaller than usual beside him, a dirty little speck of scars and heartache. He feels my gaze and glances down. So, Newtown. Sighing, I brace myself for the discussion. We need to do it, I reply. Not just for the war, but for us. Reds, the tech towns are little more than enslavement. I've never set foot inside one, but I've seen Greytown, a city of ash and smoke, crowded onto the poisoned riverbank. I've seen Cameron's neck and her brother's, both harshly tattooed with their assigned place, their profession, their prison. I intend to leave Newtown and the other slums as little more than corpses, empty, dead, doomed to rot and disappear and be forgotten. I know, Tiberius says softly, his voice tinged by blue regret. As I watch, his eyes darken. He knows what I'm really saying. If there were no crown between us, I would take his hand, kiss his shoulder, thank him for even such a small display of support. I bite my lip, blinking quickly to chase off the urge to touch. I'll need Cameron. Her name wakes him up. Is she alive? I offer, letting the word echo off the tumbled stone of the passageway. It lingers, a question as much as a hope. She has to be. He slows his pace. Farley still hasn't heard anything. She will soon. The Scarlet Guard contingents in Piedmont, now converging on the Lowcountry to evacuate anyone who escaped the base, should have reports back in a matter of hours. And Iberum should have more intelligence to relay when Rash gets to the other survivors. There is no realm of possibility where Cameron isn't on the list. She's too strong, too smart, and too damn stubborn to get herself killed. I can't even entertain the idea. Not because we'll need her to help destroy her wretched home, Newtown, but because she'll be one more body on my conscience. Another friend I pushed toward death. I squeeze my eyes shut, trying not to think about the others who were still in Piedmont when Bracken took the base. Cameron's brother, Maury, the teenagers of the Dagger Legion, rescued from one siege, only to be caught in another. Nothing compares to the agony of losing Shade, but losing the others could destroy me just as easily. How long will this last? How many people will we risk losing? This is war, Mayor Barrow. You risk everyone, every single day. Especially the person next to me. I bite my lip, almost drawing blood, to stave off the thought of Tiberius, Cal, dead and gone. It doesn't get easier, he says, the words ragged. I open my eyes to find him staring ahead with the dogged focus he usually saves for a battlefield or a war council. What? Losing people. He growls. There's never a moment where it goes away, no matter how many times it happens. You never get used to it. An eternity ago, when I was Marina Titanos, I stood inside a prince's bedchamber. He had books all over the place. Manuals, treaties on war, strategy, diplomacy, maneuvers and manipulations for gigantic armies and single soldiers, calculations weighing the risk and reward. How many people could die, and yet he'd still be able to claim victory? Back then it was a stark reminder of who he was and whose side he was on. It disgusted me to think of him as a person who would trade life so carelessly, spill blood for another inch of progress. Now, I've done the same thing. So has Farley. So has Davidson. None of us are innocent. None of us will ever be able to forget what we do in these days. If it never goes away, I murmur, feeling as if I might be drowned. It will eventually be too much. Yeah, he says hoarsely. I wonder how close he is to his line and how close I am to mine. Will we cross it on the same day? Is that the only answer? Do we walk away broken and beyond repair together or apart? His eyes smolder over me. I think he's asking himself the same thing. Shuddering, I quicken my steps, a firm signal to both of us. What's the plan for Harbor Bay? I ask, looking down the long hall. It bridges this wing of Ridge House to the next, arcing over a weaving garden of trees and fountains barely visible in the darkness. Tiberius matches my pace easily.
Nothing is set until Davidson comes back, but Farley has ideas, and her contacts in the city will certainly be of help.
I nod in agreement. Harbor Bay is the oldest city in Norta, a warren of red criminals and their gangs. A few months ago, one of those gangs, the Mariners, tried to sell us to Maven as we searched for new bloods. But the tide is changing. The Reds of Norta are falling into line as the Scarlet Guard grows in power and notoriety. Our victories are having an effect on some, at least.
There will be civilian casualties,
Tiberius adds, matter of fact.
It isn't Corvium or Piedmont. Harbor Bay is a city, not a fort. Innocent people, silver and red, will be stuck in the middle of this.
He flexes a hand, stretching out long, keen fingers before cracking his knuckles, one by one.
We'll start with Fort Patriot. If we can take control there, the rest of the city will fall.
I've only seen Patriot from afar, and the memory is vague. It's smaller than the Piedmont base, but better equipped and far more important to Maven's armies. Governor Rombos and his house are sworn to Maven, I reply. They're still firm allies. Due in no small part to me, since I killed his son in the arena during a failed execution. Of course, he was also trying to kill me. They won't surrender easily. Tiberius scoffs.
No one ever does.
And if you win the city? I prod. If you survive.
Then I think we can get Maven to the table.
The name sends a jolt through me. At my collarbone, Maven's brand smarts and warms, itching for attention. He won't negotiate. He won't surrender at all. I feel sick at the thought of Maven's empty eyes,
his wicked smile, the cloying, unbreakable obsession plaguing us both. There's no point in it, Tiberius. He winces at my use of his full name, eyes sliding shut for a second.
That's not why I want to see him.
The implication is clear.
Oh. I have to be sure, he grinds out. I ask the Premier about whispers in his country, if there are any new bloods like Ilara, anyone who might be able to help him.
And?
When I walked away from Tiberius in Corvium, he looked heartbroken, agonized. This is no different. Love has a way of cutting us apart like nothing else.
He didn't think so,
he admits quietly.
But he said he would keep looking.
I lay a hand on his arm, still damp with sweat. My fingers know his skin as well as my own by now. He feels like quicksand. If I linger too long, I won't be able to escape. I try to be gentle. I doubt even Ilara could fix him now, if he would let her.
His flesh flares hot beneath my hand and I pull away, remembering myself.
He doesn't react. There's nothing he can say and nothing he has to say to me. I know what letting go of Maven Kalor looks like.
The passage ahead of us dead ends at a T-shaped junction, trailing off to the left and right. His room's to one side, mine to the other. We stare at the wall in silence, neither of us daring to move. Speaking to him feels like a dream, a painful one. Even so, I don't want to wake up.
How long?
I whisper. He doesn't look at me.
Davidson will be here in a week's time. With another week to plan, his throat bobs. Not long.
The last time I set foot in Harbor Bay, we were on the run. But my brother was alive. I wish I could go back to those days, hard as they were.
I know what Evangeline's trying to do. Tiberius says suddenly, his voice thick with too many emotions to place.
I glance sidelong at him.
She's not exactly subtle about it.
He doesn't return the gesture, continuing to stare at the wall in front of us, never leaning one way or the other.
I wish there were some middle ground.
A place where our names and our blood and our pasts don't matter. A place without weight. A place that has never been and will never exist.
Good night, Tiberius.
Hissing, he clenches a fist.
I really need you to stop calling me that.
And I really need you. I turn and walk toward my room, my footsteps echoing and alone.
17. Iris. Archaon will never be my home. Not because of the location, the size of the city, the lack of shrines and temples, or even my bone-deep, inborn disdain for Nortons. None of those things weigh as much as the emptiness I feel without my family at my side. It is a hole I try to fill with training, prayer, and my other queenly duties. Boring as some of them might be, but all are necessary. The most important is to stay in fighting shape. It would be easy to soften in my apartments of silk and velvet, waited on by red servants tripping over themselves to bring me anything I want. It was the same in the Lakelands, but I never wanted to find solace in food and alcohol the way I do here. My training sessions also set a good balance, so I don't fall into the trap so many royals and nobles find themselves in. A trap Maven baits well. Many of the lords and ladies still supporting his reign seem more preoccupied with his parties and feasts than they are with the wolves at the door. Idiots. Prayer is more difficult to come by in this godless country. There are no temples in Archaon that I know of, and the shrine I demanded be built for me here is small, a glorified closet tucked away in my apartments. Not that I need much space to commune with my nameless gods, but in the heat of high summer, the little room crowded with worn faces is hardly comfortable, even with my abilities circulating cool moisture through the air. I try to pray elsewhere, or at least feel my gods as the days pass. But it grows more difficult the longer I'm away from home. If I can't hear them, can they hear me? Am I infinitely alone? I suppose that is easier. I want no connection to Norta. Nothing to tie me to this place when Maven's brother overthrows him. Unless my mother does it first. My queenly duties are the only distraction from my isolation. Today my schedule takes me across the great bridge spanning the Capital River, to the other side of the city. As far away from Maven as I can still get within the diamond glass walls of Archeon. He appears outside the palace less and less, occupying himself with endless councils, or long hours alone. I hear the whispers of the servants. His clothes end up burned most days, charred beyond repair. It means he's losing control, or he doesn't care to keep himself in check. I think it could be both. East Archeon mirrors the western side of the city, rising up from the river's edge to the cliff-like banks that roll off into gentle slopes. Everything is green this time of year. That reminds me of home, at least, though little else does. Even the water is wrong. Salt, not fresh, and tainted with the whispers of pollution from the tech slum upstream. They think the barrier trees get the most of it, but any nymph would know better with a single sniff. The buildings here are tall and oppressive, all columns of granite and marble. Their roofs crowned in sculpted birds with splayed wings and arched necks. Swans, falcons, eagles. Their feathers are copper and steel, polished to a blinding sheen. Even in the middle of a war, the capital itself carries on in ignorant bliss. Reds walk the streets, marked by their crimson bracelets or the colors of their employing houses. Silvers in their transports roll between their destinations. Museums, the galleries, the theater are all still in operation without change or delay. I suppose they're used to war, as the Lakelands are, even within the borders of their own kingdom. Today I'm attending a memorial luncheon, to honor the soldiers lost when Maven's brother and his rebels took Corvium. My sentinels follow as always, garish in their flaming robes. Though I wear my usual colors, a nod to my native home, my blue blouse and jacket are trimmed with Maven's black and red. I feel wrong tainting myself like this, but no one would know from looking at me. I smile and nod with the best, trading idle conversation with the many lords and ladies who wish to favor their new queen. No one says anything of any real use. It's all for show, even with the families of those who died. They clearly don't want to be here, preferring to face their grief alone. Instead, they're trotted out like actors in a performance, put on display. One after the other explains how their loved ones died, all murdered by some red terrorist or Montfort freak. A few are barely able to finish their speeches. A clever tactic, one I'm sure my husband is behind. Anyone who might oppose this war, or even prefer Maven's brother on the throne, would have a difficult time holding to their convictions after such a show. And I play my part in it well enough. We are here today to mourn, but also to send a message. We will not be controlled by fear, I say as firmly as I can, staring out at a chamber crowded with sharp-eyed lords and ladies. They look on with rapt attention, either to be polite or to look for cracks, hunt for weakness. Many, I know, would abandon Maven's Norta if they thought it was the right play for their houses. It's my job to convince them otherwise, to stay, to fight, to die. We will not give in to the will of rebels and terrorists, and power-hungry criminals hiding behind false promises. We will not throw away everything our country is, our ideals, what Norta is built on, what our very lives are built on. My elocution lessons come to mind. Although I was never as talented at speechcraft as Teora, I do my best. Holding a dozen gazes at once, never flinching, never stumbling. I clench a fist at my side, hidden in my skirts. Norta is a silver country, born from our strength, our power, our achievements, and our sacrifices. No red will take what we have or change who we are. They are nothing to us, no matter who their allies are. Maven Kalor will prevail. True Norta will prevail. Strength and power. I bite back a grin as I slip familiar words into the previously approved speech. Let them face our flood. Despite all my restraint, I can't help but smile as the crowd claps and cheers for Lakelander words. My mother's words. Get used to it, Nordens. You'll bow to my colors soon enough. The heat wave is broken, making the walk back to my waiting convoy of transports pleasant. I want to linger on the street, enjoying the fresh air and gentle sunlight, and I move as slowly as I can. My sentinels edge me along, their gloved hands and masked faces flanking me in practiced formation. We're ahead of schedule, by my count. I only have to return to the palace and prepare for tonight's dinner. Still, the open transport door comes too quickly. With a huff, I step up and in, my eyes downcast as the door shuts behind me. Good afternoon, Your Majesty. Two faces stare back from inside the transport, on the seats across from mine. One is familiar, and one I can guess at. Both are enemies. I yelp, sliding back against the leather seating. On instinct, I reach for the canteen of water I keep close. My other hand scrambles for the pistol under the back seat. Fingers catch me under my chin, forcing me to look up. I expect them to belong to the singer, the uncle who can murmur away all thought in my head, turn me inside out. Instead, I look up to find it's the grandmother who holds me, her bronze eyes alight and determined. I freeze, knowing exactly what Annabelle Lareland's touch can do. I picture her grip changing, shifting, and then my skull exploding open, spewing brain and bone all over the transport interior. Some advice from one queen to another, my dear, Annabelle says, still holding my chin. Do not do anything stupid. Fine, I whisper, showing my empty palms. No gun, no canteen, no weapons but the air and the transport with us. I glance over her shoulder at the silhouette of my driver and the sentinel guard, both on the other side of the glass. Julian Jacobs follows my gaze, then sighs. He wraps his knuckles on the divider. Neither of my guards moves.
They won't be able to hear you for some time, I'm afraid, he says. And they've been instructed to take the scenic route back to the palace.
With an empty smile, he peeks out the window as we weave down unfamiliar alleys.
We're not here to hurt you, Iris.
Good. I didn't think you were foolish enough to try, I shoot back, a little impeded by Annabelle's lethal grip. Do you mind? I sneer at her. With a patronizing bow of her head, she releases me, but doesn't back away, keeping me within easy reach. Under my clothes, I try to gather moisture on my skin, pulling it from the air, and the cold, terrified sweat breaking out over my body. Maybe I can get some kind of shield ready if she tries to obliterate my fingers. If you want to send Maven a message, use the proper channels, I toss at her, throwing up a brazen wall of attitude. She scoffs, looking disgusted.
This isn't a message for that wretched brat.
Your grandson, I remind her. She scowls but carries on.
I want you to pass along a word to your mother, the way you usually do.
Sniffing, I cross my arms. I don't know what you're talking about. Annabelle rolls her eyes and exchanges glances with Julian. He is far more difficult to read, his expression still and studious.
I don't need to sing a confession out of you, Julian says plainly. But you know I can, if need be.
I say nothing, do nothing. My face is still as the surface of an undisturbed pond. No confirmation either way. The Lareland woman barrels on anyway, looking down her nose at me.
Tell the Queen of the Lakelands that the rightful King of Norta has no quarrel with her, and every intention of preserving the peace his usurper negotiated. That is, of course, if assurances can be made.
You want us to stand down? I sneer at her. She regards me with equal disdain.
an impossible thing. No, not stand down. Appearances must be maintained, of course, Annabelle says, splaying those wretched fingers. I watch each one as they drum a rhythm against her leg. But I'm sure we can find some compromise other than open war between our two sovereigns. Once more I glance at my guards behind glass, bewitched into ignoring us. The road through the window is unfamiliar, to me at least. I grit my teeth. He is no sovereign. Our alliance is not with Tiberius Calor, a traitor to his kingdom and his kind. The uncle tips his head to one side, surveying me like a painting. He blinks slowly.
Your husband is better at that lie than you are.
Husband. The reminder of my place here and my position at Maven's side is an easy jab, but it stings nonetheless. Lie or not, the people believe it, I hiss back at him. Red and silver, all over this country. They believe what they are told, and they will fight for the person they think Maven is. To my surprise, Annabelle nods. Her face falls, a picture of concern.
That's what we're afraid of, and that's why we're here. To prevent as much bloodshed as we can.
Annabelle Lirilan, you should have been an actress, I chuckled darkly. She just waves a hand, glancing out the window. Her lips curve into the ghost of a smile.
I was a great patroness of the arts a lifetime ago.
For some reason, Julian glances at her, his eyes softening. She glances back, oddly reserved. Something passes between them, an unspoken word or a shared memory, perhaps. Annabelle recovers first, looking back to me. Her voice is stern, and I feel scolded without a reprimand.
When Tiberius wins the throne, he is prepared to offer land and money in exchange for Lakelander cooperation.
I raise one eyebrow, the only indication of any interest. After all, who knows where this might lead? Keeping options open is smart. She knows what I'm doing and pushes on.
The entirety of the choke ceded over.
Again, I have to laugh, tossing back my head. The moisture against my skin, an almost shield, prickles against me.
Useless land, I scoff. A minefield. You're gifting us with a chore.
The old queen pretends not to hear me.
And a betrothal to Tiberius's heir, a child of Calor and Samos, twice royal, an heir to two kingdoms.
For appearance sake, I keep laughing, but my stomach churns with revulsion. She's trying to barter with an unborn child, either mine or Tiora's. Our own flesh and blood. Consent be damned. At the very least, I agreed to my own arrangement. But doing the same to a baby? Disgusting.
And what about your red dogs?
I ask, leaning forward into her territory. It's my turn to push back.
The Scarlet Guard? The blood freaks of Montfort? Mare Barrow and her kind?
Julian answers before Annabelle can. She doesn't seem pleased, either by his manner or by his intent.
You mean the next step in our evolution, he says. It isn't wise to fear the future, Your Majesty. That never ends well.
Futures can be prevented, Lord Jacobs.
I think of the other new blood pet Maven lost, the one who could see too far into the future. I only heard rumors of him, but the rumors were enough. He could see every path as it changed, even fates that would never come to fruition.
Not this one.
Julian shakes his head. I can't tell if he's happy or regretful. The man is an odd, sad soul. Tormented by a woman, no doubt, as most men like him are.
Not now.
I look between them and do not like what I see. Each could kill me if they wanted, and despite all my training, I would go down easily. But if they were here to murder me, they would have done it already.
You've lost Piedmont, so you want the Lakelands, I mutter. You know you can't win without one of us doing your dirty work. We do enough dirty work of our own, Princess,
Annabelle replies, her voice low and annoyed. She puts emphasis on my born title. She doesn't recognize Maven as king, so she wouldn't see me as a queen. You put so much stock in your Montfort shield, I tell them both. Are their new bloods really enough to outweigh the might of our three nations? Julian folds his hands in his lap, thoughtful. He is more difficult to unsettle.
I think we all know that the full might of the Lakelands will never come to the aid of Maven Kalor.
That smarts a little. I was stupid before, signaling what I did to Mare through that new blood in the Piedmont prison, for no reason other than to prove I could. Clearly she passed on the message. Or maybe we're simply that transparent. I bristle, firing back.
Just as we all know your Red Alliance will not last, that it is another powder keg close to open flame.
This does make Julian uncomfortable. He shifts, thrown off balance, and a slight gray tinge colors his cheeks. Not so with Annabelle. She thrives, grinning, as if I've just served her a delicious meal. Even though I don't know how, I feel as if I've misstepped. The woman puts out her hand and I jerk back, out of her grasp. She seems amused by my fear.
There is something else we can offer.
Julian's blush deepens and he frowns, dropping his gaze, breaking eye contact with me, essentially putting down his only weapon. I could move against him right now and get the upper hand, but Annabelle is too close, too lethal. And I have to admit, I want to know what the last piece of her bargain is. Go on, I breathe, almost inaudible. Her smile is wide, pointed, and while Maven is his mother's son, I see some of him in his grandmother, in the sharp grin and the scheming mind.
Salin Iral put a knife in your father's back, she says.
I flinch at the memory.
I assume you would like to have a conversation with him.
I respond without thinking. A mistake. I can think of some things I would like to say, yes, I mutter quickly. The phantom taste of blood fills my mouth.
I'm sure you know why it was done, she says.
Pain pricks at my edges. My father's death is still an open, oozing wound.
Because this is war, people die.
Her dark eyes, like molten bronze, widen.
Because Salin Iral did as he was commanded to do.
Any sorrow I feel for my loss steadily turns to rage. It licks up my spine, hot and begging.
Volo,
I can't help but hiss. The name of the Samos king sours in my mouth. But Annabelle knows how to push me.
Would you like to speak with him, too? She breathes,
almost seductive in her offer. At her side, Julian returns his gaze to me, his lips pressed together. The lines of his face seem to deepen. I drag a long breath through my teeth.
Yes, I certainly would, I breathe. What is your price?
Grinning, she tells me. They melt into the city like ghosts, simply stepping out of the transport at a crowded corner, disappearing into the ranks of red servants and more common silvers. My guards don't seem to notice or mind, falling back into our pre-scheduled route. Julian Jacos did his work well, and when I return to the palace, nothing seems amiss. None of my guards seem to realize they've lost 20 minutes to the abyss of a stranger's charm. I make a quick escape, intending to go to the shrine tucked away in my rooms, needing the familiar and blissfully empty space to collect my thoughts. Mother must be informed of everything that just transpired, and as soon as possible. But I can't trust that my message won't be intercepted, even through the deepest back channels. Annabelle's offer could get me beheaded, burned, mutilated, and murdered. This message can only be passed face to face. I manage to get up to my room safely. With a wave of dismissal, I leave my sentinels at the door to my chambers, as usual. Only when I'm truly alone do I realize what I've done, and what has just happened. I start to shake, my hands trembling as I step through my receiving salon. My pulse races. I think of Salin Iral and Volo beneath my hands, drowning, dying, paying the ultimate price for what they did to my father.
Traffic on the bridge.
I freeze, eyes wide. His voice always puts a fear in me, especially when it comes from my bedroom. My instincts tell me to run, damn myself, escape the city somehow, find a way home. An impossible thought. I force myself forward instead, through the double doors leading into my sleeping chamber, into what could be my coffin. Maven lazes across the sprawl of my silk blanket, one hand tucked behind his head, the other resting on his chest. His fingers drum in time, bone white against one of his thousands of black shirts. He seems bored and angry, a bad combination.
"Good afternoon, wife," he says.
I glance around the room at the many fountains I keep close, not for decoration, but my own protection. I feel each as it ripples and chases, more than enough to use should this turn ugly. If he knows what I've done, what I entertained, what I agreed to do.
"What are you doing here?"
No use playing the part of doting wife, not while we're alone. He'll know something is wrong if he doesn't already. Or, I realize with a cold chill, he could simply be here to fulfill our marital duties, neglected as they've been. I'm not sure what terrifies me more. Even though I agreed to this, knew this was part of the bargain, knew he was part of our alliance. Perhaps I have overestimated his obsession with Mare, or it has simply worn away. He turns his head to look at me, one cheek pressed against the silk. A flop of black hair falls across his forehead. He seems younger today, albeit more manic. His eyes are barely blue, overtaken by wide black pupils.
"I need you to send word to the Lakelands," he says. "To your mother."
"Stay still. Don't move. Don't show any relief," I tell myself, even as my knees threaten to give out.
"To say what, exactly?"
I reply, donning a mask of indifference. He moves gracefully, standing with smooth motions. Though Tiberius is the warrior brother, Maven is not without his own physical skill.
"Walk with me, Iris,"
he says, smiling sharply. I have no choice but to obey. However, I ignore his outstretched arm, keeping a safe distance of a few inches between us. He doesn't speak, forcing us to walk in silence as we leave my rooms together. I feel dangled on the end of a string, suspended over a pit. My heart hammers in my chest, and I do everything I can to maintain my mask through long minutes of walking. Only when we reach the throne room, empty at this time of day, does he turn to look at me. I brace myself for the blow, preparing to fight back.
"Tell your mother to prepare her fleet and her armies," he says, as if remarking on my dress.
Surprise replaces my fear. He keeps walking, mounting the raised steps to pass behind the throne. I edge around the influence of silent stone. Even the brush of it makes me gulp.
"What? Now?"
I sputter, raising a hand to my throat. My mind races as I study Maven, looking for the lie. It's barely been a week since Bracken took back Piedmont. Surely the Brothers' coalition is still regrouping. "Are we under attack?"
"Not at the moment."
He shrugs, indifferent, and still moving, still drawing me along after him.
"But soon enough."
I narrow my eyes, feeling unease deep in my gut. Maven approaches one of the doors behind the throne, heading for what are supposed to be the Queen's public chambers. A library, a study, sitting rooms. I don't use them, preferring my shrine instead. He passes through, and I have to follow.
"How do you know that?"
I ask. Dread pulls in my stomach. He shrugs again. The room is dark, the windows heavily curtained. I can barely make out the stripes of white and navy blue, the colors of the last queen to use this place.
These rooms have an air of dust and disuse. I know my brother, Maven says. What's more, I know what he needs, and what this country needs from him.
And that is? He smirks at me, opening another door across the sitting area. His teeth flash in the semi-darkness. He does all he can to seem a predator. Something about the next room makes me pause, makes me ache deep in my marrow. I keep still, seemingly unaffected, but my heart pounds. Maven? I murmur.
Cal has allies, but not enough. Not in Norda.
The young king drums his fingers together, his eyes glazing as he thinks out loud. He remains in the doorway, on the edge, never stepping through.
He wants to sway more of my subjects to his side, but he isn't a diplomat. Cal is a warrior, and he'll fight to win favor among the high houses. To show how worthy he is of my crown, he has to tip the scales. Make the nobles believe he isn't a hopeless cause.
Maven isn't stupid. Predicting the movements of his opponents is his strong suit, and the only reason he's been able to survive and win for this long. I never take my eyes off the doorway, straining to see what it holds. The room beyond is pitch black. So he'll attack another city. Maybe even the capital. Maven tisks like I'm a stupid child in the classroom. I fight back the urge to stick his head into the nearest fountain.
My brother and his coalition intend to strike Harbor Bay.
How can you be sure? The king purses his lips.
It's his best option. The fort, the ships in port. Not to mention its sentimental value, he adds, spitting out the words with revulsion. His mother loved that city.
His fingers play with the latch on the open door. It's a strong-looking lock, more complicated than it should be. I swallow hard. If Maven thinks Cal will go for Harbor Bay, I believe him. And I don't want my mother or our armies anywhere near the conflict. Excuses spring up in my head, ready to wield. Our fleet is still in the lakes, I offer, sounding apologetic. It will take time. Maven doesn't seem surprised or even concerned by my words. He passes closer to me, his hands inches from mine. I can feel the sickly heat of his skin.
I expected as much, he says. So I'll give your royal mother some incentive.
My stomach twists. Oh? His smile flashes. I hate it.
Have you ever been to Harbor Bay, Iris?
No, Maven. If I were a lesser person, untrained, my voice would tremble. Not with the fear he wants from me, but with rage. It ripples through me, furious as a storm. Maven doesn't seem to notice or care.
I certainly hope you enjoy the visit, he says, still grinning.
So I'm bait? I hiss.
I would never call you bait, but incentive.
He heaves a sigh.
Yes, I believe I did call you that.
How dare you? He speaks over me, his voice louder than before.
With you in the city, ready to lead the defense, I'm certain your mother will do all she can to uphold her end of our alliance. Don't you agree?
He doesn't wait for me to answer, and his voice turns ragged. A fist clenches at his side.
I need the armies I was promised. I need reinforcements. I need nymphs in the harbor to drown that city and everyone in it.
Hastily I nod, if only for the sake of placating him. I'll tell her. But I can't guarantee. Maven closes the distance between us, and I tense. His fist closes over my wrist, grip tight, as he pulls me forward. I bite back the instinct to fight. It will only end in pain.
Just as I cannot guarantee your safety there, he says, stopping just short of the dark doorway.
His lips twitch.
amused. Or even here. At some hidden